I'm Ashley Eicher.
I'm Hunter Kelly.
And welcome to, ooh, you did that differently this time, Hunter. Wow,
thank you. It's a new season.
It is a new season. Look at you. Welcome to an all new episode of the All Our Favorite People podcast. We are so excited you guys are with us today, and we're so excited to be back.
Yes, a little hiatus, but we're back fresh, ready to go.
Our first guest this season is Bear Reinhardt of Need to Breathe. And I mean, you guys will understand this when you listen to the episode, but I am a huge fan.
Huge.
Of Need to Breathe.
Huge. Like, usually huge. I'm the one with like songs that I need to talk about the origins and the backstory. And this time it was Ashley. And I loved just watching you have so much fun
on Zoom because we're able to see each other. And then I'm just fangirling a little bit, is what you called it.
It is fangirling. But. But it's great. And I think, you know, I think Bear was, he really appreciated all the fan, you know, the fan love coming from you. Out of Bodies, the new album, though, it just came out. And this is
a
brand new project from them. It's the first since Bear's brother, Bo, left the band. And so we talk about the changes there. And also, it's crazy because this record was written and recorded before we went into lockdown and quarantine. Mm-hmm. But so much of this record speaks to kind of the need for connection that we all have and kind of overcoming obstacles that we're all doing right now. So for me, it was a really inspirational record.
I mean, I loved the album. I mean, is anyone surprised? I know you're not surprised at this point. Yeah. So I love Out of Body. It's such a great record. And I agree with you. Like, I think, you know, their music to me is so often has been when I need a pick me up or when I want to feel like, okay, I can take on the world. Like, there's something about the anthemic nature of their music that drives me in that direction. And so I feel like there's so many elements of this record that fills that for me too. And so, and not to mention, like you said, it's inspirational and encouraging connection.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Plus, there's a collaboration with our friends Drew and Ellie Holcomb on this record.
Oh, and how much do we love, and we know you guys too. I mean, Ellie Holcomb is still one of our most popular episodes on the podcast.
She continues to deliver.
And we recorded that two years ago. Anyway, we just love this conversation. He also tells a very hilarious story about him and his sons that I have actually told several people that are mutual friends since then.
Yeah, this is one of the all-time great stories that's ever been told on All Our Favorite People. It really...
It's got to be like top six, probably.
Yeah, I'm just a real big fan. And you'll know exactly which story we're talking about when it comes up.
It's just real life. It's real life.
It's real, all right.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, we're just going to get to it. Here he is, Bear Reinhardt.
Hello, Bear.
Hello.
Bear, it's so great to have you on the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Full disclosure, I've been a longtime fan of Need to Breathe, and this is going back at least like a decade. And I was going back through and looking at just the catalog of songs, and I really feel like you guys have been sort of a soundtrack to the last decade of my life. And at the same time, I think I first discovered you guys, I was working at CAA, which is a booking agency, in like 2007, 2008. I'll never forget, you know, when I think about live shows, I think about like some of my favorite live shows over the years. Like, I think about Justin Timberlake or Bruno Mars and Adele. And I think we could all probably rattle off some of our favorite shows. And you guys have given me two of my favorite moments in a live show ever.
That's awesome.
One was a couple of years ago. You guys were at Ascend with Johnny Swim, who I also love. And then another one, this had to be like 2007, 2008. I think it was right after The Outsiders came out. And it was a secret show at 12th and Porter. I think it was like a 300 person venue.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the place was packed. And I'll never forget, you guys, I think, played the whole album. Played Washed by the Water as the last song, but you stepped away from the mics, played Washed by the Water a cappella, and it filled the entire room, and then walked through the crowd as you were singing it and walked out the back door. And I was like, that's the most badass thing I've ever seen.
I love that. That's awesome. Those were the days, the 12th and Porter and the End and all that. Pretty crazy time. A lot of fun, though.
And y'all have had so many amazing moments like that over the years, to go from those smaller venues like that back in the day to now playing these huge amphitheaters and arenas.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird because I think definitely during this time, you forget that you have done that. You know what I mean? Until you see something, because I think we're at home parenting and you're just kind of trying to survive. You know, you forget that you see a picture of like Red Rocks or something, it blows you away a little bit. So hopefully I haven't lost the confidence to do that whenever that does happen again. But some of the memories I have of coming up in the smaller clubs is just, you can't beat it. And it's hilarious to think about, you know, how naive you are at the time. Cause I thought, I was an adult. I don't know why I thought this, but I was just like, you know, if you could sell out the club in your town or whatever, that you had made it, you know, the same place you'd seen like the indie band you saw in high school play or whatever. And we definitely felt that way when we were coming through those places like 12th and Porter. It was like, well, done. We've already conquered Nashville. Like, what's next? You know?
Oh, that's so interesting though. You talking about like, I forget that I've done that, because, you know, as Ashley, you were talking about these shows, I'm just like, wow, I'm getting to the point now in this that I'm really starting to miss it. I think, you know, watching like concert films and everything. So I'm wondering, Bear, like, yeah, tell me about that. When you go back and look at, you see photos of that, like, what is the sensation for you? Like, you know, because I think we adapt. Yeah. We adapt pretty quickly to the situations that we're in. But it's just like, sometimes I'm just like, I don't want to think about it too much because then I would miss it. You know, do you feel that way?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I'm like, for me personally, I'm a really shy character. I talk a lot when it's one or two people, but in big groups, I mean, especially when we first got in the band, I remember my wife would tell you that like I would just get this crazy anxiety if I went to a wedding or anything like that. You know, it's like, we have to leave right now. I was that guy. And so the idea, when I look back at the videos of being in front of that many people, it's just like, it's so separated from me. Somehow you do get comfortable with it, or, you know, for me, I get a little bit lost in it. And maybe it's like kind of when I'm at my best, you know, and I'm not really thinking anymore. And so I think because I'm so checked, it's like Will Ferrell in that movie. I can't remember. He's like, I blacked out. I don't know what happened. I think it's kind of like that when I look back at the shows. I'm like, where was I? What was I thinking when I was up there doing that? Just like, it's so separated from my personality.
But you guys bring this insane energy to a live show. So how do you tap into that? I guess it kind of is just getting lost in it.
I think so. I think we always said, anytime we ever hired a crew guy, this is funny because it was like the first guy we ever hired, we told, and then we had to tell a second, you know. But I was always like, we want to put on shows like if you were 16 and you were seeing, you know, your favorite band. Like, I just remember having this awe for, I saw Ben Harper, for example, and I was like, what he's wearing and the way the lights look and everything about it was just so magical to me. And we were like, we just want to leave that possibility. Like, let's just act like every fan out there is like that. And so I think there's an element to all of us. We kind of sort of channel that a little bit. Like, let's be like kid. Like, it's the first time we play guitar. Like, we hurt ourselves through all this, or people sing along. And yeah, it just becomes a habit, I think, a little bit, putting yourself in it like that.
Well, how have you stayed creative during this time and in quarantine and us being in a pandemic?
It's been weird. I know I've talked to a lot of other music, like you mentioned Drew and Ellie Holcomb, you know, everybody kind of dealing it with it different ways. For me, it's been more creative. I don't know if that's because I've been trying to get away from my kids and go to the studio in the mornings. I'm not sure what came first, but it's been really crazy. I've written more songs during this. And I think the real reason is that a lot of times for me, writing music has always been about what I'm going through personally. And I kind of like, I'm battling that in my own timing, and then the world sees it and then it's out there, and it's gone for me, you know. It's felt really interesting to me. I feel like the whole world is kind of going through the same thing at the same time, as if we're on this like struggle as humans to figure this out and survive. And, you know, so it's given a real purpose to the songs for me. It's kind of like, yeah, there's certain kind of songs you can write during that. And my wife is a nurse practitioner, so I've always told her, you know, that, and I've always thought really that what she does is probably more important than what I do, but you feel a little bit like you're part of that sort of medicine in a way during this period of time. So that's really been the driver for me. It's been kind of fun.
Listening to this new record, Out of Body, I understand that most of this was recorded and written before the pandemic, right?
Yeah.
But so much of it like is so applicable to what's going on. The last track, Seasons, for me is like, there's a line in there that just really sticks with me about, we won't be riding highs and lows. And that just, for me, says so much about, there's so much in this record about overcoming and persevering and going to the next, you know, getting to the next hurdle. But that line for me is just about not riding highs and lows. It's just like, this time is just kind of being like, there's not a lot of crazy ups and downs. It's just this, you know, little sense of disease going on. So that, man, I wonder how that's happened with you as you're now, you know, putting this record out and having other people hear the songs. It's kind of, you know, I go back to that thing where it's like, do you feel like you're a vessel or a channel for these, this message to get out in some ways?
Yeah. I mean, I think I've always felt like I would probably use that word channel more often. I think I've always thought this, but I think it now even more than ever. I think songwriters are like, you know, kind of dumb in a way. They're like, in the sense of like, it's very emotional what you're writing about. You're trying to like, but if you grasp it fully, it's not really a song. You know, if you totally understand the problem, it's like, at least to me, it's always been not very interesting. It's like, we're not providing answers. You know, we're just providing company along the way. I think that's kind of how I've felt about it. And so it's nice. That's actually a relief. You know what I mean? During a period like this, it's like, I don't have to say how this is going to end up or how you should feel, or I can kind of say honestly how I feel and how much of a struggle it is. So yeah, it's interesting. I think our band definitely, you know, you were saying that it feels like stuff, you know, means something particular now. I definitely think that's true. I think we write about, we always say we write about the redemption story, but we just never get to the end. You know, we're about the drop down part before the end, you know? And so I think that's an interesting kind of place that we live always. And that definitely, you know, I think it relates right now.
It's been very encouraging for me during this time, you know, during this time, because for some reason yesterday, and I saw it, yesterday was Monday, we're taping this on a Tuesday, everybody on social media yesterday was like, this is the Mondayest Monday ever. And I was like, yeah, it was. It was really a Monday. So listen to this record was really encouraging, because it was just like,
I appreciate that.
Having a Monday in a pandemic, man.
I think uncertainty is just not, it's not, you would think of being a musician, traveled around a lot, that that would be somehow, you know, which I do like that. I love change, but the uncertainty level, I think for everybody, you know, it's just kind of crazy. And it's a, you know, I've talked to some other guys, John Foreman, Switchfoot singer, and talk about a lot about it. And he's got this great way with words, of course, with lyrics and stuff. He's like, I just feel like, you know, it's a house of mirrors we're living in, don't you? And I was like, that says it about as good as you can say it to me. Just feel like you're forced to face things that you can normally just move on past.
Well, I even think about the song Seasons. I mean, thinking about the fact that in the writing and recording of this record, you guys have gone through a lot of transition over the last 4 years. Can you talk just a little bit about that?
Yeah. Yeah, I can. I mean, my brother left the band this year, which has been, you know, kind of crazy. I think the band had more of a chance to grieve it in a way than the fans did, because we had been talking about it a little while. And I think we had a while to kind of think, like, are we going to still do this or quit? You know, to be honest with you, I think the band went into this new record very humbly because of it. And you know, excited, but also kind of like, man, I don't know what this is going to look like. And if, can we do it? And is it worth doing it? Is this like, you know, I think we really respect sort of the fans and that we've made over the years and how serious they take it. And so that was something that we just questioned going into it. But we really had a crazy, we felt like we were quarantined even before the quarantine started. We did this record in a 3-week period, pretty much with the same guys, you know, in the same big room. And it felt probably the most cohesive time of a record, you know, that we've ever had. So yeah, I think the transition thing for us has been, it's been gradual. It feels like it's been the last couple of years that we've been going through it.
Well, and I loved reading in the bio where you and Seth and Josh, it sounds like that you went to South Carolina to a beach house.
Yeah.
Just to kind of start figuring out ideas, which you guys are from South Carolina, but how did like being on the beach and being in that house together kind of help you set the tone of where you wanted this album to go?
Yeah, I think we all had to kind of lean on each other a little bit more. You know, I think we even did that. We really wanted to bring in people, producers and mixers and those kind of things that we really like listened to, as opposed to just like they were working for us. And so we wanted to start out where we had a clear sort of idea of where we're going. And I think always, we're always trying to get back to the garage band days in a way. And we've gotten older and kids and life and everything. It's just like, you don't see each other as much. There's something really powerful to me about like having breakfast with somebody, you know, where in your pajamas, it's like a very, you know, it's a different kind of thing. It's like, we didn't go to work. We're always at work. We're there. And it feels like we're kids in a way. And I think that that helps us, at least to me, dream and kind of think outside of, you know, what the possibilities are. That's probably the hardest thing I think about being in a band. The longer you're in it, you realize how good everybody else is. And that's sort of the enemy of what we're trying to do here. You know, you're trying to dream big and think this could be amazing, or this song could change somebody's life. And to have that sort of naive hope, or whatever you want to call it, it takes a little bit of in the right situation.
Well, especially you guys have been together for so many years. I mean, forming the band in what, 1998?
Yeah.
So, like, you all really deeply know each other, and you've kind of grown up together over the last 15 or so years.
Yeah. It feels, you know, it feels like we've lived 7 or 8 lifetimes in that period of time. All of us have changed a lot, you know, and I look at that as our biggest, you know, success by far, is just staying together. Somebody, a band that we had met early on, was like, that's all, that's really going to be the hardest thing. It's, can you make it, you know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now? And I attribute that mostly to the fans, to be honest with you. I think left alone, if we were in a quarantine all the time, I don't know how long Need to Breathe would be able to make it. We really appreciate, you know, how serious and crazy our fans are. We have one of the most like strangely broad audiences. If you were to come to a concert, you're like, whoa, that age group does not look like it belongs here. And that, you know, it's like, well, it's really conservative over there, and it's really not over there. So, and our fans just are really, we say it all the time, that they live life to our music. And that's a huge reason I think that we keep doing it.
I mean, I said that at the top of this, like, you guys have sort of been a soundtrack to the last at least decade of my life.
That's so amazing. And like, yeah, that's why I'll go back to that thing about being rock songwriters maybe are just a little bit dumb. I think, you know, the idea that you could do that or have that sort of power, we know we don't. And a lot of times it's the songs that we didn't expect to be, you know, that sort of message for somebody that becomes that on a record, or when a song changes, like even like the seasons, you know, like you guys were talking about, you know, the pandemic comes along, and now that has its own meaning that I could have never come up with.
I mean, it's ready for the hymn book, Bear. It's ready for the hymn book.
I appreciate that.
Well, I was watching the live stream that y'all did when you were announcing the record. And, you know, towards the end, it was like the fans from Brazil were taking over. So, I mean, tell me about this international audience that, you know, for a kid from South Carolina, this has got to be pretty crazy to know that your music's reaching so far-flung places.
Yeah. How weird is that? I mean, we were from a really small town in South Carolina, and we didn't know, honestly, when we first started touring, if it would even work like in the North. You know, for us, it was like, whoa, you pass that line, like you become, they start talking funny. It's like, there's no way they're going to like our band. So the idea now that we've been able to do that some internationally, it's kind of mind blowing. And every time I'm on an interview, if it's somebody, it's Australia or somewhere, they're like, hey, did you know that the song is really doing great here? Like, no, I didn't know that. you know, it's always so kind of amazing to me still.
Thank you guys so much for listening to the All Our Favorite People podcast. If you like what you hear, go check out the All Our Favorite People community on Patreon. That's patreon.com/allourfavoritepeople. And for as little as $3 a month, you can help us keep the podcast growing as we add live shows and events.
We're also offering you exclusive access into planning episodes, as well as off-the-cuff interactive bonus content that we just can't fit into the show. You'll find out who's coming on the show first and possibly get a shout out on the podcast.
I don't know why I wanted to laugh at you just then. Check it out on Patreon. That's patreon.com/allourfavoritepeople. So when I think about this record, you guys start the album with Mercy's Shore. And this line of one day we'll wash up on Mercy's Shore, which I loved. And the end of the song really got to me, because it goes from being this very anthemic song to this very intimate guitar vocal that I loved. What was sort of the mindset of starting the album with this song?
Oh, is that when you're talking about the girl when you were 8 years old?
Yeah.
That was
God. I thought God was a girl in my school. Yeah.
I'm like, what is going on? The first time I heard this, I was like, oh, this is taking a turn.
Yeah. honestly, like we've always, you know, one premise that we use with live, we're always like, you know, you want an audience to deal with you. We always say it's like the worst thing you could do is go out there and play and everybody's like, yeah, we're pretty good. You know, it just means nothing happened. So I think we kind of think of that in the first song of a record too. It's like, hey, this is the theme of this record. We're going to like, just go ahead and throw it all out there and just like verbally vomit on you and see if you're ready for this journey. And it also kind of like, I think I've always loved albums like that. It feels like the first track is kind of them telling you where they're going. And so that was really what it was. I mean, the meaning behind that song really was about, there's a lot of stuff about Child Again and all these kind of things, these moments where me seeing young kids, you know, that I have now, just live life the way they do. It's so inspiring to me, especially being someone who's got a fair amount of anxiety and, you know, deal with depression things and things like that. So the idea of how they walk into a room and how trusting they are of us. And, you know, when we tell them we're going to love you forever, no matter what you do. And it's like, they're like, okay, you know, they can buy that. It's way harder for us. So I think that's kind of where the Mercy Shore song comes from.
I think for me, you talk about your kids I think in this time of quarantine and really slowing down and kind of stepping back and stopping, like I've spent a lot of time with several friends of mine and their kids, and not having children, like being able to really watch the world through their eyes so much and actually being present enough to pay attention has been kind of transformational for me. And just thinking about, so even listening to this song, I was like, gosh, getting back to being a kid again and looking at the world through a child's eyes. What has that been like for you, looking at the world through your boy's eyes?
I probably do it too selfishly. I'm always like, I think I can take that. I can steal that vibe. You know, it has been really cool. I mean, I think mine are so young that they don't really know what's going on, except for they can't go to the jump place because the virus, you know, they say. So I think there's an element of that, which is just really pure. What's so sweet about it is that they're at the age where they want to be around us all the time. Like they can't get enough. Aww. So like, this is like, you know, a dream world for them. And so I think that's been really cool to see. And also just to have the opportunity, I'm really thankful. You know, you keep saying, I've been in this thing for 20 years. You keep saying like, well, at some point we'll take a year off or we'll do this. You know, it just hasn't happened. I think we've been on the road for 15 years, maybe. So to have the first year where, you know, you can really spend time and like you get this consistent thing. I've been telling them stories when we go to bed. They want true stories about dad, you know? And honestly, and so most of them are about pooping and peeing and whatever.
Boy stuff. You
know, wonderful, yeah. Wonderful topic.
Yeah. They just love it. They just love it. So, or things exploding or whatever it is, but I've told, like, it's crazy now. I've told them every story that I know about myself or that I can recall that I would tell anyone. Imagine 150 of these, you know, and now they're like, dad, I already know that. Duh. I know what happened. So we're, you know, whatever, but I just feel like we're so close now because I mean, I'm just thankful for it. You know, it feels like I've gotten to tell them or share with them a lot of my life.
What was sort of the favorite story? What's their favorite story?
Yeah, they've told a babysitter this numerous times, which is in college, I went on a date and actually pooped my pants at a at a record store. And this is all true. The girl I was dating actually lives here in Nashville, which is hilarious. But yeah, so I told them that story about how, you know, I had to figure out how to clean it up and that people, I literally, this is getting really gross, but
this is what I'm here for. Here, right here. Yeah.
At the end of this, I threw my underwear away in the bathroom and people that walked in after me found it and yelled that so loud. We're in a movie theater that I could hear them behind me and the girl I was with could hear them say, oh my God, he left his underwear. So I told them that story and they've repeated it numerous times. They're like, oh yeah, dad poops in his pants all the time. So
what records were you looking at the time of the incident?
Well, it's so crazy. I couldn't move. I was in this record store because I needed to go so bad and there wasn't a bathroom. And this was like, you know, I couldn't tell the girl. It was a first date actually. So I just looked at the same records and how this actually happened. She came over, she's like, what are you looking at? I was like, well, I'm just looking for, you know, some inspiration for record covers that I might have someday.
What is it about record stores? I remember when I was a kid, we'd go to Walmart after school, and I would always, like, Mom, I'll be looking at the CDs. Like, that's just where I lived, in the Walmart.
Yeah.
And always had to poop. And even now, going to, like, look at records now, it's just like you have to, what is it about?
I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is.
If you ever stopped up, go to the record store.
I have never in my life thought about that.
Oh, yeah. It happens all the time, Ashley.
Wait, would that go down as your worst date ever? Probably.
No question.
Yeah.
And I didn't think it was the kind of thing where I didn't think it was funny at the time. Obviously, I was under a lot of stress. And then I was telling the story in the dorm like a month later. And the guys knew her and me and were crying laughing. And so it's become a great party story to have. I don't regret it. I'm glad it happened.
You've lived some life, Bear. You've lived some life.
Yeah. You know.
So I wanted to have a moment where I asked Ashley, because we haven't really talked about this record yet together. Ashley, what did you think about Banks? Did it speak to your heart?
Oh, man. It's so funny you bring that one up, because I've listened to that one several times now. And I even wrote down, I was like, I love the lyrics of, I want to hold you close, but never hold you back, just like the banks to the river. And if you ever feel like you're not enough, I'm going to break all your mirrors.
I was like, this is where Ashley lives, y'all. I was like,
and I want to be there when the darkness closes in to make the truth a little clearer. I want to hold you close, but not hold you back. I'll be the banks for your river. And I was just like, holy crap. I think for me, probably as a woman, and that struggle of comparison and worth and having to consistently remind myself that where my worth is found with God and who I truly am, instead of wondering what the world thinks. And this idea of having someone that would look at me and say, like, exactly what those lyrics are. Like, it was awesome.
Oh, thanks. I've been married a long time, and I was grappling with this idea, because I think some love songs can have a very weakening of, like, it's in some way like I'm taking care of you or some, you know, it kind of, and I just, that never made sense to me, because it's not my situation. My wife is certainly smarter and stronger, you know, than me. And so,
and you guys you've been married for what, 17, 18 years?
Yeah. Or wow. 17 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, and we got, I mean, we were kids, obviously, when we got married, but just that's been true about it every time. She's just a better person than me, period. You know, but you also, that doesn't mean you don't need, you know, in your relationship, you can't use it sometimes. And so it's like, how do we sort of, you know, I don't know if you guys know, there's a writer named Trent Dabbs in Nashville.
Oh, yeah.
And
we know Trent,
were on the
Kristen.
Road together. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. And so we were on the road together, and I was kind of going in there, and I was like, what do you think about this banks of your river thing? Is this like an analogy that works? And immediately it was like, yeah, let's do it. Like, so anyway, I think we finished it in another like 15 minutes after that. Kind of had that idea.
But I love this idea of loving someone so much that, and having a relationship where they can be freely to be who they are, much like I think of with a river.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it is a powerful analogy of, obviously what it is. Changing someone is not love, obviously. You know, and so I think that's, but yeah, it's very sweet. And I didn't know, sometimes when you write love songs, especially when they're personal like that, you don't know if they will relate. So it's been really cool to see if because everybody's relationship is different, I guess, but it's been really cool to see kind of how people responded to it.
Well, you've written love songs over the years. So what did your wife say when she heard this one?
She liked it. I will say that she is not the biggest fan of love songs. So she's not, you know, so I'll play her something. I've told this story live before. Solo record, I wrote the song called Mary, You're Wrong. It's like, you're wrong if you think I'll ever, you know, get over you, basically. And I wrote this, I went into the restroom, actually. She's in there getting ready or something. I was like, what do you think about this? You know, she's like, I don't know. You know, I'm like, well, I like it, so I'm putting it on there. So, but just, there's never been, you know, she's in the best way is my toughest critic in that way. She's always like, oh, I like the rock stuff a little bit better.
Yeah. Which leads me to Riding High, which is a favorite of mine on the record. It really, I was looking through this, I guess you picked like several albums that were really, influential for you. And for me, it was like, oh yeah, that Black Crowes connection really makes sense with Riding High. But I loved it because, you know, bad decisions don't seem bad at the time. Don't
Yeah.
I can tell you've got this sense of humor and you like to mix things up a little bit. So I just feel that coming through.
Yeah. I'm a huge Black Crowes fan, first of all. And just, you know, the first, I was kind of into acoustic music, grew up playing at my dad's church. You know, it's like back, the first real rock and roll concert I went to, I was 18 and went and saw the Black Crowes. And I was like, I don't know what I've been doing all these years. Like, what I want to do what they do. So I went out and bought an electric guitar the next day. I mean, just always, I loved the idea of like gospel and rock together. And I also think music is rebellious in some ways. And I don't think that's all bad. I think the 80s made us think that, like, you know, rock and sex and drugs were what it was all about, but in like this really awful way. But the truth is music is freeing, mm-hmm. you know? And yeah. I think there's something, I mean, even kids are rebellious. They want to bang their bodies into the wall, you know? And so I think there's an element of that, that we always want to capture, like, don't get too serious. Let's not forget why you started playing guitar in the first place.
I remember being like 11 years old when Nirvana came out and Smells Like Teen Spirit was on the radio. And I was just basically thrashing on my bed, like bouncing up and down. And it was such like rebellious. And I was like, I scared myself a little bit. Like, where is this coming from? But yeah. I loved it,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah. I was talking to a counselor the other day there and said, and they had boys, this guy's older than me and his boys are grown up now, but he was saying like, yeah, somewhere around 4 o'clock before dinner, they have to like do some sort of crazy, you know, experiment or something where they jump off something or break something or whatever. And I was like, and they've explained it to me. He's like, it's kind of like, that's how they love each other. They just bang into it physically. So there's an element to that. I think that you never really do lose. And there's something so freeing about, you know, being in an open field and screaming or I feel like rock and roll gives you that opportunity a little bit.
Oh yeah. I was just telling your producer Kason, who's an old friend of mine. He's like, well, and I got a MIDI keyboard during quarantines, I've been making tracks, and I was like, but they're all filthy, Case, and I can't let anybody hear this stuff because it's just like all the rebellious stuff that I loved when I was, you know, like 11 or 12 that was just like, I shouldn't be doing this, but I am, you know, which brings me to, I was listening to you guys on Andy Grammer's podcast, and I was living for your conversation talking about taping over Sandy Patty tapes like dirty songs like OPP and Sir Mix-a-Lot and selling them.
Right. OPP.
So brilliant. You know, the song that I did that with, every time I hear it, I think about like recording it off the radio is DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, Summertime. Do you remember that jam?
Right. Yes.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So laid back and it felt so, again, felt so rebellious in a way. But now I'm just like, oh, this is so innocent. But my question was, what was the Sandy Patty record? Because I freaking live for her.
I don't know. I don't remember. Actually, it's funny. There was like, I actually had an uncle who lived at worked at a Christian radio station, and he would bring us this like paper bag, like grocery bag of tapes.
Yeah.
You know, and me and my brother were always like, no thanks. You know, so my parents had them laying around. So those were always the ones. It's like the ones maybe they weren't even listening to were the ones we would grab. And it was just a thing at school. It's like, it was a Christian school. It's just hilarious. And me, my brother and the bass player Seth all went. And that was the easiest thing to do. I mean, we got in a lot of trouble during that phase of our life.
Well, it's just like boys do.
Yeah. Well, and also just, you know, music has changed so much, obviously, since then. Back then, the truth is Christian music wasn't very good and there wasn't a lot of it.
Right.
So, you know, I'm not saying it's like totally great now, but it's definitely changed a lot. And I think back then we were so desperate for just quality music, you know, but we didn't know what quality music was yet. So it's like when you're in seventh grade and you're a boy, it's like, that's why Metallica was so great, you know, or whatever. It's like this really heavy kind of. So for us, you know, any of the rap stuff, they just said what we were thinking or what we were talking about was we just loved.
I mean, do you think that influenced when you guys formed the band and you started releasing these songs that, while not Christian songs at all, they're very much rock? I mean, some of them do have a message within them that I feel like anchors in my faith or pushes me there.
Yeah, I think the thing that we found out, like our first record especially, we went to England to make it and we weren't really proud of it when we got back. We were just like, this feels like we made a record to be like somebody else. This is not really honest and it's not really us. And so the thing we found out was like us being honest was all we had, really, is the only thing that related to people. And I think our faith is a pretty huge part of our lives. And I think even said in the Andy Grammer thing, I was just like, sometimes it feels like you're in like an on and off, on again, off again relationship with God in a way that's not intentionally, but it's just like, man, you go through these crazy times, maybe never losing your faith, but just like the closeness or how important it is to you at the time. And I feel like that's been true in our career. And there's been some records, and probably this new one is probably one of the ones that's the most honest about it that we've made. You know, but we never, it was weird for us because we grew up like that. We didn't also think like, let's make a Christian record, you know, let's do like, you know, we always were like, man, it seems like it's just kind of strange setting out like to be like, this is what we're doing. And this is the only people who can listen to it. But we're all really proud of the fact that like the faith elements in there. I mean, obviously, at least for me, I mean, it gets old talking about the other things, you know, the truth is it ends up coming back to the real thing.
So your dad, though, was a preacher, but was also a musician that played with Roy Clark and Glenn Campbell. So what did he do with those
dudes? He was a trumpet player.
Okay. So where did he play with them, on the road or in the studio?
On the road. Yeah.
Okay.
On the road. Yeah. And so he had a little bit of that. I mean, he was one of the reasons why I finished college. He was just like, you have to get an education. You cannot go do this, you know, unless you finished. But yeah, it's crazy. I mean, they were both, my mom and dad were both, my mom's a piano teacher, and they were choir directors of the first job in a church. So they are really good musicians. And the truth is, Bo and I really aren't. You know, we have been faking it since we were 16. Yeah.
I would argue with that, Bear.
I appreciate it. Well, we were never proper, you know, like we didn't want to take piano from our mom when we were in school, and we were into sports instead, you know. So when we started playing guitar, we, you know, open tuned the guitars and just figured out how to write songs and things like that. So we're very different musicians. It's taken us a very long time to get up to where they, you know, can really stomach our music. I think they're super proud of us, but it took several records before. You know, mom was like, she's like, this background vocals are pretty pitchy. I don't know if you know that, but like, I'm like, thanks, mom.
That's amazing.
Which is so funny, because when I think about incredible harmonies, I think about you guys. I think about Johnny Swim. I think about Drew and Ellie, Little Big Town. So it's funny that would be, and even just listening through this record, like those are the moments I get so excited about, are the big, incredible harmonies that feel like an anthem. So it's funny to me that your mom would say that, like, you know,
that's, well, maybe she's the reason they got there, you know. Maybe
there's always room to grow. Yeah,
that's
always
right.
Room to grow.
That's right.
I am interested, though, because for me, growing up in the church, my parents never really put this on me. I put a lot of stuff on myself growing up in the church, but you know, like a feeling like, you know, that divide between Christian and rock music. Did you ever like say like, oh, if I'm gonna be would like have a relationship with God, I need to not listen to this secular kind of music? Did you go? Because I went through that.
Yeah, I think my parents went through a phase where it was like that, and I think that's partly the 80s. It was just like a really strange
when
time.
You look back at the moral majority and all the stuff that was going on. I'm like, crazy. Whoa, yeah, we were caught up in some stuff as kids we didn't even know about.
Yeah, totally. And that's a good reminder for now, because we also are and don't know it, you know.
True.
But I think that that's true, that you know, there was this big divide of that. I think we always didn't see the divide as much. It was always this, you know, we loved any music that our friends knew, and that's kind of how it was. Like when we started making music, we're like, we don't want to make something that only these people like and all these other people never hear about. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I do think my parents said we're like it. My dad took me to see James Taylor when I was 16.
One of the best shows I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, incredibly. I mean, the songs were so good, and I was like, I just started playing guitar and all that. So he did open us up to the rock and roll thing when it was in his 80s mind, age appropriate, which might have been a little bit too late, but it's still, you know, I think he always knew there was great music out there to listen to, and that we were kind of desperate.
It's crazy you mentioned JT, because the title track of the song, Out of Body, reminds me of a song from James Taylor's Hourglass album called Line 'Em Up. Do you remember that
one? Oh, yeah.
And he's like, there's a line in there. It's always stay with me. He says, talking about, I'm going to leave my body and live in my mind. And so that just that reminded me. I used to take that in college to be like, I'm going to quit exercising and just be like an academic person, or just like really, because I didn't like exercising or working out. But
as if you had to pick one or the other.
But now I see they go hand in hand. But yeah, so it's just, it was, you know, so I had a JT moment with that, yeah, with that totally. Song. Yeah.
Yeah. We had a crazy, we, you know, years ago we toured with Taylor Swift, and it was this really bizarre time for the band because it was just, you know, it was, this is pre her, like, really becoming a woman. She was still very young, and all of her audience was really young too. But we were playing Madison Square Garden and open it up, and James Taylor is going to be a guest that night. And so we're going around telling everybody with the crew, you know, like, we if there's any way we can meet James Taylor, like, it would be the, and he was the classiest, like, sweetest, just like walk on stage while we were sound checking. He's asking us about how we travel and all that, just really, really sweet. So kind of a full circle.
I know, it's crazy. I've interviewed him like twice, just in, you know, in passing situations, and it only hits you afterwards that, like, oh man, James Taylor. Yeah. Because at the moment he's just this New England small, you know, kind of introvert.
Yeah, he's like,
dude.
Seems like he's into gardening.
Yeah. That's
what he, yeah. For birds or yeah, bird exactly. watching.
Yeah, which, right. which was that the Red Tour or 1989?
Speak Now, wasn't it?
Was Speak Now.
Speak Now. Yeah. That, okay, I forgot about that record entirely. In my head,
yeah.
I was thinking about the history of Taylor this morning. Yeah.
And you guys also went on the road with Tim and Faith, didn't you, on Soul to Soul too?
Yeah, yeah, which was awesome. I mean, I definitely grew up, we in South Carolina, you cannot get away from country music. So it was always in the peripheral, I guess. But they were really sweet too and awesome. I mean, country fans are kind of the coolest, to be honest, right now. It's they're up for anything. You know, if you can tell a corny joke and they all laugh and they all, you know, it's just like, there's such a jaded thing with rock and roll. It can be a little bit like arms folded, kind of like, I don't know about this, but I feel like country fans are just along for the ride. It's awesome.
Well, they like to have a good time.
Yeah. Yeah,
at all costs. I
mean, everybody should, you know. Yeah, maybe yeah. maybe they shouldn't right now to be doing country concerts, but yeah.
I mean, if downtown Nashville is any indication currently of fans, where we're like, okay, we love the tourists, but maybe guys, let's just
maybe right now
is not the time.
I mean, I've been on local news twice in the last week about this very issue, so I'll just let that speak.
Really, that's amazing. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you basically just think it's all a conspiracy, right?
It's just, yeah. None of this, it's not happening. It's not real. And especially, I know your wife as a nurse practitioner would back me up. It's not.
Yeah, she definitely would.
Yeah.
Just science. Schmiance.
It's just science. Doctors.
Yeah.
I don't know. I do want to talk about the song Survival with Drew and Ellie, because Ellie's a friend of ours, and Drew and Ellie's been on the podcast before, and I just love her so much. But man, the harmonies on that song, like, obviously I love to hear you sing, no offense, but Ellie coming in on that song, I was like, good Lord.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been fun for me. Like, we've been such good friends since we met.
Yeah.
We met them. I've told the story before, but we met them. They were kind of like a really new act. They had like one record out, I think. And they delivered us like a bottle of whiskey and a letter or something saying like, we're fans and we'd like, you know, love to have you listen to this CD, like outside of a club somewhere. It was like, really, you know, to think now that's been 10 years ago or whatever. And we're such good friends. Crazy. But they've grown so much as musicians over the time. It's really fun. I don't feel like they're dead, because Drew could be my dad, but they, they just, you know what I mean? They've just gotten so good at songwriting and performing and those things. But Ellie's voice, I bet you I've told 25 people since we did that song. It's just because I've always thought of her, like, she's always had a great voice, been super talented, but like, she's found some like inner shrink in her voice recently. And that song Constellation, I think it's amazing. And so anyway, couldn't be a bigger fan of them.
Well, and you guys have been on the road together.
We have, yeah, a bunch. And even, yeah, their first kid was on the road with us, which was kind of crazy. They were in there on this little, like, they call them bandwagons, which is like a UPS truck that they call a bus. and it was, you know, a pretty crazy time. So we've done a lot of growing up together.
Okay. So I was wondering where the name Bear came from. And then I found out it's Bear Bryant is the inspiration there. But you're from South Carolina. What's the connection with Alabama football?
Yeah, both my parents are from Alabama.
Where? Where in Alabama?
Yeah. One kind of Birmingham area, and then the other one's Butler, Alabama.
Okay.
Which is like Meridian, Mississippi almost.
Okay.
So we grew, and what was weird for me is like I named after Bear. I was never lived in Alabama, and going to school, no one knew who, you know, Bear Bryant was. I lived in Clemson country. So, I got recruited to play football. I ended up playing in a small school, but I got recruited kind of at Alabama, and I went to a game when I was 16 or 17, and they were dedicating a Bear Bryant statue there. And there were 350 kids there named Bear. And I was like, finally, you know, these are my people.
You're like, I'm not the only one.
Yeah. I'm not. I get laughed at every time they said it in class.
Oh yeah. I mean, Saban has come along and is really, you know, a new kind of icon at Alabama. But like my friend Kelly went to the University of Alabama and, you know, at her graduation ceremony, you know, she teared up when they showed a photo of Bear. It's like, it's really religious.
Very, very serious. Yeah. Totally.
And she had a dog named Bear. So good company.
That's a better, I feel like that's a more grown up way to approach this. I told my parents, I'm like, give me a pretty redneck name and, you know, it's going to be my name forever.
You did a solo record though. Another project is Wilder Woods.
Wilder Woods.
Yeah.
So
which is the names of your sons, right?
Yes.
Okay. Cause I'm thinking Bear Reinhardt is a badass stage name, Bear. So what?
Maybe there's, you know, I'm saving that for my next, you know,
incarnation.
Maybe. My Black Crowes project. I think the Wilder Woods thing was fun because the record ended up being about the kids a lot, and it's like very personal record, and so it's kind of fun. It was not well thought out in terms of a marketing, you know, standpoint, because now I'm going to have a third kid, and we're going to name him Waters, and I don't know how he's not going to be pissed at me for naming the project after the other two.
Wilder Woods Waters.
Well. There can be another project.
The album's name is like Waters.
The what? Name?
The album, the next Wilder Woods album can be
That's
Waters.
What I was thinking. That's what I was thinking.
And it can be all water themed, like Barbara Streisand's album from 79, titled Wet. I don't know if you knew that.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Food for thought. Food for thought.
Yeah.
Food for thought. Oh, my goodness. What was it that made you decide to do that record?
I'd always wanted to do it. I think it was really about timing is why I got to do it, to be honest. Yeah. And I wanted to collaborate with people. I was moving to Nashville and there was just all these people I wanted to work with. It's hard. It's intimidating to collaborate with a band because, you know, there's a bunch of dudes in a room when somebody walks in. So it's a little easier to kind of do it in the solo project way. And also wanted to challenge myself, just kind of get back to a place where I wasn't. I feel like with the band, we kind of know what we do. You know, in a lot of ways, the train has left the station in terms of like now there's this big thing happening. It was exciting to think about something starting off that could be whatever we wanted. And honestly, it's also really refreshing to do something where you don't need it for income and it's not the job. And it's just, you know what I mean? It's not a means to an end. It's just an experience. And that's really how I approached it. And so it was really fun for me to go through it.
It's so interesting. I was talking to my friend Beth earlier, who you know, and she commented on just your work ethic and that you probably work harder than just about anybody. And she was talking about how, you know, especially in the middle of making the Wilder Woods album and writing this record, and at the same time, you're writing things for other people too. Like, how do you kind of stay creative in all of that? Because it feels like a lot of output.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's been easier, I think, because there's a lot of places for it to go. And that's something that's like, I feel like I've learned over the last couple of years about myself is that I cannot get motivated if I don't think anybody's going to listen to it. So the idea of even if it's like not a lot of people, but there's somewhere this could go is really fun for me. And honestly, since I've been here, writing has been really crazy because it does feel like, well, Monday's country day and Tuesday's rock day and Wednesday, you know what I mean? It's not that regimented, but it feels very much like I can go in there and do that and not feel like I'm totally off base or not doing what I should be doing.
Right. Because you guys moved to Nashville just a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of reason was to write but also it's just crazy how many talented people live here. You know, I obviously I'd spent a lot of time here before. But the idea of like, you know, if I have a session in the morning or something, or a co-write, and I can call one of my buddies, like, I need this guitar, I need this thing, you know, just like that's so convenient. You don't realize how inconvenient it is until you live in a place like Charleston, South Carolina, where, you know, it's beautiful outside, but finding a drummer is like, well, I can come next week. Will that work? So it's really been awesome.
Yeah, I think that's what I've really been missing with the, you know, kind of staying home more and not going to shows and not seeing people. I really am missing that part of Nashville of, you know, because yeah. There's so many times where there's these events or collaborations that happen that only happen here because the people are here in Nashville. And, you know,
just that's definitely true.
Kind of been missing that because, you know, when I'm in my house, I'm like, well, I could be anywhere in the world, you know, like being by myself with my dogs, you know. But
yeah. Yeah. No, I feel that for sure. There's an energy. I mean, Charleston was a town that I love and I love being there. But it's a very vacation town in a lot of ways. There's a lot of brunch places and, you know, that kind of thing. So this town has a certain energy to it. And it's been really fun for me anyway, to kind of be around that a little bit more. It just feels very challenging. And I've always said, I think people, I mean, I don't care who you are, but you probably play up to your competition a little bit. You get around better musicians and better writers and all that. It's really inspiring. Not necessarily a competing way, but just a sort of like challenging sort of fun way.
I need to get to talking about some of my favorite Need to Breathe songs.
Oh yes.
Okay. Usually,
we got to touch on the, cause I could make I was going back
Ashley's greatest
this morning,
Need to Breathe and hits.
I was like, my greatest Need to Breathe hits. That's hilarious. But I was going back through this morning and there's been so many songs. I feel like because so much of the music feels anthemic that I love the way, you know, it makes me feel like if I'm in a bad mood, I could turn on a Need to Breathe song or Johnny Swim. And I'm like, okay, I can take on the world. Like, it's all going to be good. But there's a couple. Brother, which was with Gavin DeGraw, which is one of my favorites. And Forever on Your Side, which I keep mentioning Johnny Swim. But
yeah,
those are two that I go back to that I'm like, God, those two songs are so good.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate it. Yeah. I think there's a combination where it's, and Johnny Swim is really good at this too. I feel like they have developed in such to be like a good live act, you know, that like you can't help but think. A lot of people, you know, my buddy Ben Rector is always using this analogy. He's like, you know, people were playing like radio game of like singles and stuff. They're playing tennis, Bear, and we're playing golf. Like is it two different sports that we're playing? Sometimes we have to play the other. We're not very good at it. And I feel like that's true with, you know, their music and ours, which makes the music kind of, it's built to be sung along to and, you know, in front of people. I think that's, we're always kind of thinking about that, channeling that. So I think the anthemic thing is true. I think that's, you know, the idea. Like I saw Coldplay, I remember it was really early on in their career. It was a couple thousand people there. I just remember thinking like, this sounds like church in a way. And so it's a really fun sort of thing to try to channel.
Well, and I feel like they're about bringing people together too. Like, I mean, I think about the messaging of Brother or Forever on Your Side, like really bringing people together.
Yeah. And I think that's a cool, you know, that's probably what I miss most about not being on the road is this feeling of like, just a lot of different kind of people, you know, it seems like online, all the same kind of people are on there. Sometimes it's just like, it gets very, you know, divisive. Whereas like in a show, there's just this element of like, we don't care what you believe or where you come from or what you look like, or like, we're all in this together. We're all singing the same song. There's something really beautiful about that. I definitely miss that.
Also Able. I'm going to hit that one real quick too. Mm-hmm. Like this thought of, I'm not able to do this on my own. To me, that feels like a deeply personal spiritual song and a conversation between, at least the way I interpret it, like me and God, like I'm not able to do this on my own.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of this guy, Richard Rohr, writer. And it's like, talks about there's as much grace in the fall as there is a resurrection. Yeah. And I try to tell myself that as much as possible. I feel like we write from places a lot of times that do feel like that. And what's crazy about the writing of it to me is that I don't necessarily have as much of a hope. We had this song called Wasteland. And, you know, I was like, this is the darkest thing I've ever written. This is the darkest time in my life. It never dawned on me that it would be encouraging to someone. But it became this like kind of thing, like, play that song. We love that. You know, I'm like, okay, I guess this is what you want me to do. So there's an element of just kind of sharing in that place, I think is really cool.
When it goes back to just the vulnerability of songwriting and sharing those parts of your life that I think sometimes we forget that other people are going through some of the similar things that we're going through and need to connect in that way to be encouraged.
No doubt. Yeah. I mean, I think emotion, if I'm, you know, my only writing lesson I would ever give, you know, to other songwriters is that it's the one, like the, it's not language as much as it is actual emotions. Like if you can somehow get across a feeling, that's what connects everybody and everything as humans, you know? Yeah. And so I think for me, that's what I try to do when I'm writing about my own stuff is like try to get into the emotion of the thing less than maybe the story itself.
Love it.
I'm wondering about any kind of gospel music that you did grow up with and like Sandy, you know, I asked about Sandy.
Uh-huh.
And obviously she's not an influence anymore.
Yeah.
Which is a real shame because grew up with her voice, but now when I listen to her, I'm like, the tone, the control.
Oh man. Yeah. it's interesting. I was into, some really, I mean, obviously DC Talk was a pretty formative kind of band for us. I think partly because the way they changed over time, felt like we kind of grew up with them in this weird way, but also in the way their shows were, that was super, like, they just put on big, I mean, I think you put on those DVDs now and just be like, whoa, that was incredible. Like they just knew how to, and I've talked to Toby about that a lot since that, you know, I'm just like, man, that really shaped the way we made shows and how this live experience should be. But there was all kinds of, there was this singer, Russ Taff.
Oh yeah.
Really edgy kind of thing. I was like, oh, I love that. That was before I knew who Joe Cocker was.
Yeah. He's got a duet with Sandy Patty called Home of the Lord. That's like some real disco cheese. And I love to play that for people. But I get what you're saying with DC Talk, because with them and with Amy Grant too, it was like, it was music that incorporated those themes of faith, but also that could be given to the world, you know, that could appeal to the world instead of just a small group of people. That was always, that was always kind of like, okay, I'm really attracted to that. And I see a lot of that same kind of thing with you guys as well.
Yeah. There was some, you know, one of the stories about that was Collective Soul, which, both of two brothers were in that band and grew up. Their dad was a preacher and that kind of story. But I remember we used to go to the Christian bookstore and listen to the demos and just be like, next, no, you know, just sitting there all day, me and my brother. And their record somehow got in there. And it was one of the big records, one of the early ones. And I remember I told Ed, I met him later and we worked together on some stuff. But it was like, I was like, that was so crazy. He's like, wait, what? He had no idea it happened.
We were there.
But for me, it was really big because it was like this connective tissue with my peers. Mm-hmm. You know, we went to a public school and played sports and all that. It's like, you want to be able to bring music up that made sense to them too. Mm-hmm.
Well, I love it. And I love this record and I'm really excited. By the time we release this, the album will be out, but I'm really excited for you guys in this album and where you're going.
I'm excited to hear some of these songs in an arena or a big amphitheater.
Oh, I can't wait.
They're made for it, you know? I mean,
yeah. Yeah, that's what we use that term a lot, the arena rock thing on this record. Like, let's get the drums a little bit bigger and get it more. And it was our first ever date, like, we had held at Bridgestone. So next year, we're going to do it.
Hunter, have you been to a Need to Breathe show?
I think I saw y'all open for Taylor, but that was
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, bring your earplugs and your sunglasses.
I will.
It's a real,
You need the full experience, Hunter.
Yeah. Always earplugs. Right. Always earplugs. Yeah.
Well, thanks, Bear. Thanks for being on the show and being here today. And
yeah, you really need to release a record under your name because I really want, I mean, a t-shirt. I see a whole merch line. Bear Reinhart. It could be like, you know, Patagonia or LL Bean level type stuff, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I have one of these. See, I don't know if you can see that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah. We'll make it happen. I'll give you a call.
It's so funny you mentioned the t-shirts because I've been watching Yellowstone and it makes me think of, like, for some reason, as Hunter was saying that, it's making me think of Yellowstone.
Oh, no. That would be pretty cool. That's the dream. Get a song on that show.
How can we monetize? It's always, let's
how can we take your name and just cheapen it? Get it to the masses.
Awesome.
Honestly, like in watching Yellowstone, there could be a Need to Breathe fit on there. one of these songs could be on that show. There's been a lot of Stapleton.
Yeah.
So
there has. Yeah. Yeah. That's what we're going for. So okay. We'll see.
All right. We're putting that into the world.
Okay.
Thanks, Bear.
Thanks, Bear.
Sure. Yeah. That's thank y'all. Have a good one.
See ya.
I mean, I'm so ready to go see a concert and be in a crowd of people again.
Yeah, I got to say, I really miss Bridgestone Arena here in Nashville, like going to shows. And, I think this is, in some ways, it kind of makes us realize what we've got because we go to a lot of shows and we're so fortunate here in Nashville. But yeah, I mean, so I'm excited to see Need to Breathe at Bridgestone Arena and hear these songs from Out of Body as they were meant to be with a big group of people, healthy people.
Healthy, safe people. all of us singing together.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't. And
not worried about aerosols. Also, congratulations, Bear Waters is here.
When we recorded this podcast with Bear, he said his wife was due any day, and I'm pretty sure she had the baby within several days of us recording, if not
it was
a week.
Really, so really close.
It looks like August 17th. So welcome to the world, Waters.
Waters.
Two
Bear
sweet
Reinhardt.
Older brothers.
Waters Bear Reinhardt. Like I'm still seeing all the marketing things of like Bear Reinhardt, boots, Bear Reinhardt, jackets, coats, like heavy barn coats for like outdoor work.
I honestly don't know why more people don't come to us for marketing ideas because really it's an endless supply over here, guys.
Well, I mean, I like to shop. I love to spend money. And so let me tell you how to, me spend money because I'll do it.
Hon, don't we know it?
I'm really good. You will. I'm really good at spending money and gaining weight. Two talents I have.
What a blessing. What a blessing. Oh, you guys, go check out Need to Breathe's new album, Out of Body, that is out now. You can also follow them on social media. And then you can go listen to the back catalog that I talk about of all my favorite songs.
Ashley's Need to Breathe.
I'll make you guys a playlist. You can find us on social media at all our favorite people. You can find me at Ashley Eicher. You can find Hunter at Nashville HK. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. We don't want you to miss a single episode. I mean, we love you guys so much.
Thank you.
And we'll
Welcome
see you next
back.
Week.
Welcome back.
Yes.